Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Mike Florio with Bernstein, Holmes, and Rahimi on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Let's talk some football with Mike Florio, shall we? I say we shall, because he joins us now on the Score Hotline that is presented by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670 to score. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how's it going?
Things are going well, Mike. I wanted to get your thoughts on what's going on between Tua and Brian Flores, because there's serious allegations that seem to have been taken seriously by Brian Flores.
I'm not surprised by the content of the criticisms that Tua lobbed at Flores. The timing seems a little off. Maybe he's emboldened now that he has his massive contract and he can open up and revisit things from years gone by. I know from 2021, right around now, there was a fever pitch of rumors that the Dolphins were going to trade for then Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson. That hovered over the Tua Brian Flores relationship, to the point where I heard at the time Tua was voted a captain for the Dolphins going into that season, and he declined it because he sensed this change coming, with Flores fixated, as people in the organization would say, on getting Deshaun Watson. That hovered over the team until the trade deadline, and then after that, all of a sudden, Tua started playing better. So the constant drip, drip of "you stink, you shouldn't be here, someone else should be here," i.e. Deshaun Watson, that didn't surprise me. When Tua went with the horrible person reference, or terrible person, excuse me, terrible, not horrible, it's horrible that I got it wrong, terrible person reference, that really seemed like a bridge too far. And I thought Flores handled everything very well yesterday. No cliche, no coach speak, very raw. At times he seemed rattled. At one point he seemed shaken, like he was going to break down, which shows you how much this really affected him. And he's looking inwardly at how he can make himself better. He said coaching is about correcting, and he's correcting himself. He didn't deny any of it. He didn't say Tua's wrong or Tua misperceived the relationship. It sounds like he essentially admitted what Tua was saying, and he's conscientious about trying to become a better coach as a result of it. So I think Flores handled it very well. And I can't wait to hear what Tua has to say when he next has a press conference and gets asked more questions about it, as he should be, because it really did seem like something that was a long time coming, and it was almost a little over the top.
Do you think that any of this, or at least Flores's behavior, could have had something to do with what was going on behind the scenes that ended up, you know, in a legal aspect in Miami when it came to just the way the team was being run behind the scenes?
Well, I guarantee you this, if and when there's ever testimony taken in the Brian Flores claims against the Dolphins, the league, and other teams, and it's still stuck on square one, 2.5 years later, on which claims will be arbitrated, which ones will be resolved in court. But if I'm representing the Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa is one of the witnesses to come in and help me prove that Brian Flores was fired for reasons unrelated to the things he's alleged in his complaint, that this guy was crossing the line with how he was treating the quarterback, et cetera. That's how these cases get handled. But at a deeper level, two things. The Dolphins have been, for the most part, a dysfunctional mess since Stephen Ross bought the team. He doesn't live in Miami. He doesn't work in Miami. The people who are there without the boss present get into various turf battles and back and forth and undermining and blaming each other. And I just think Flores may have been under enough pressure that he was venting in the direction of the guy in front of him, the quarterback. And at the end of the day, Stephen Ross fired Brian Flores and wanted to throw Tua Tagovailoa overboard. Remember, he was trying to hire Sean Payton and trade for Tom Brady. That's what got them in trouble for tampering. So Tua was going to be gone right with Brian Flores after the 21 season.
How in flux is the kickoff rule?
Well, it depends on who you ask. And I asked the league about this. They had a preseason health and safety rule change conference call the other day. And I'm curious whether or not the owners, who are meeting next Tuesday to talk about private equity rules, and they have a kickoff discussion slash update on the agenda, could they move the touchback point from the 30 to the 35? Because I believe a lot of coaches are keeping their cards close to the vest on what they plan to do when the regular season rolls around. I think more than a few are just going to bang the ball out of the end zone and concede the 30. The average starting position is like the 28.3 or thereabouts with this new formation. Just make it the 30 and take the long return off the table. So the owners can change the rule if they want. The league said it's not likely that they'll do it next week, but they didn't rule out the possibility of tweaking the rule at some point down the road. Once the season starts, I think it's too late. You compromise and undermine the integrity of the season if you have different rules that apply to different games. Week one, week two, it's the 30. Then all of a sudden, week five, week six, it's the 35. That's not good for anybody. If they're ever going to do it, they need to do it before week one. And next Tuesday when they meet in Minnesota, that's their opportunity to understand where this is going to go. Teams are just going to give up the 30 and not get burned for a long touchdown. You move it to the 35, they may have no choice but to kick it off, put it in play, and take their chances on trying to tackle the guy who may go all the way.
Mike, how are the disgruntled receivers' situations similar and different?
The one big similarity is, when does the clock strike 12? And for the NFL, for these kinds of negotiations, and really in any industry premised on two sides with different positions having to come to an agreement, first they have to agree on when the deadline is. Now, I think the deadline should always be before the start of training camp, because you lose something if the player isn't there getting ready for the season. And how many times have we seen players who weren't part of camp, weren't part of the preseason, weren't around until a week before the first game that counts, they aren't the same guy that they were. So I think for all three of the guys that I've been watching, Brandon Ayuk of the 49ers, CeeDee Lamb of the Cowboys, and Ja'Marr Chase of the Bengals, that's a hold-in that hasn't been covered the way the others have been. I think we're looking at roughly a week or so from now. That's when the clock strikes 12. Get the deals done or not. I assume all three guys will get deals. They'll be in the fold, participating in the practices that will be held in advance of week one, and off we go. And the longer that it goes with Ayuk not being traded to the Steelers, I think it's more likely the 49ers are just waiting for that moment where the clock is chiming 12 times to make their final offer. Because if you do it before the deadline, what happens is you get squeezed off of it when the deadline comes.
It makes a lot of sense. And frankly, I think that's those three being disgruntled also set their own market and thusly set the receiver market for everybody else. I want to ask you about what's going on at Jets practice, because I feel like that's a daily saga. But I also am not sure what people were trying to clarify. I know Robert Saleh invoked the name of the Junction Boys. Aaron Rodgers said it was harder. I'm not real sure what anybody's getting at here, but I figured it's something to discuss.
Well, before the 2011 CBA, there were two-a-days and more padded practices and more intense off-season workouts. Part of what the owners gave up to get the Players Association to agree to significantly altered financial terms was the intensity, the frequency of these practices that can make training camp harder. Within the confines of those rules, Robert Saleh has decided to make training camp harder this year. And the idea is, and this is a Jim Harbaugh thing, he talks about the callus that you want to build up so that you can withstand the grind of the regular season. Now, along the way, you might get injured, but the thinking is you'll be more prepared for that physical demand. And look at what the Jets have. They have three games 10 days apart between September 9 and the 19th. They're going to play three times at San Francisco, at Tennessee, and then a Thursday night game against the Patriots. And when Aaron Rodgers, was talking about this yesterday, he explained that that's the theory. And then he throws in this gratuitous, you know, some people might disagree with that. I don't know why you go there. You're the leader of the team. Don't equivocate. Don't hedge. You got to be all in with what the coach is doing, because the players are going to hear that and they're going to think, well, maybe Aaron Rodgers disagrees with it. Maybe I should disagree with it. Maybe there's a better way to do it. Maybe he is working us too hard. They all need to be rowing the boat in the same direction at this point. Once the coach decides, that's what they're going to do.
Mike, I thought one of the most interesting things about Hard Knocks last night was watching Matt Eberflus talk about the joint practice. And he laid out like a clear guideline saying, look, we're not going to be fighting in this practice. If you want to fight, you will be conditioning for the rest of practice. How do coaches feel about, like, what's the value that you're hearing about joint practices? And do you know if any of the other coaches set clear guidelines and expectations when it comes to what your conduct needs to be like in those situations?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, the coaches of the two teams involved need to truly trust each other that the players aren't going to cross the line. And the league this year has gotten involved in policing it, which was overdue. The Lions and the Giants got fined $200,000 each for multiple fights over 2 days of joint practices. Usually that second day is the problem, because after the first day, the players go back to the meeting room and they get ripped when they look at the film as to how they got beat by the guy that they faced from the other team. So there are scores to settle the next day when they get together again. That's part of the risk. So however you handle it, however you send that message, if you're a coach. Now, part of you wants to see the fire flash from time to time. You could argue it's harder to put the fire there than it is to control the fire, but you got to be able to control the fire, especially now that the NFL is ready to impose discipline on teams that cross the line. You don't want to get a guy injured. You don't want to be stupid. You don't want to be doing reckless things. Remember Aaron Donald swinging that Bengals helmet a couple of years ago and got no punishment at all from the Rams other than maybe a talking to and a request that he not do it again. It needs to be taken more seriously because somebody's going to get hurt during one of these things. But the key is you want to get the work now that the preseason is three games, on the way to two, on the way to one, on the way to none. These joint practices are important, but you can't have guys crossing the line.
Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Bo Nix. I might be leaving some off, but there are rookies in this quarterback class to this point performing and looking like they belong. Is anything meaningful over the large sample of this preseason success?
Well, I think it was obvious from the get-go both Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels would be week one starters. In fact, when I saw the announcement the other day from the Commanders that Daniels would be the starter, I thought maybe it got caught up in a glitch somewhere in the Matrix. This is news, but apparently it was. They didn't tell us what we already assumed to be the truth. I think Drake May is still in a position where he's got some work to do. I don't think they're quite ready yet, and I don't think they want to throw him to the Wolves prematurely. I think Bo Nix will be playing. The great unknown in Atlanta is Michael Penix Jr. For whatever reason, they've decided they don't need to see any more from him in preseason. Well, he needs those reps if he's not going to be playing. It just makes me wonder what they have up their sleeve if they felt compelled to put him on ice for two preseason games.
Sounds like he's playing is what it sounds like.
Well, I think that this is the perfect way, because usually when you put a rookie quarterback out there, there's no going back. You can't bench him. Then you get into a situation where you're messing with his head. He's having his confidence shattered. What they could do with Penix, they could say, and I don't know what they're going to do, and I don't think they know what they're going to do. But what they could do with Penix is say, Kirk Cousins really isn't ready. We're going to let Penix play until Kirk is ready. And then you know what happens? If Penix struggles, it's not we're benching Penix. Kirk is ready. And if Penix plays well, Penix just keeps on playing. It's the old 100% rule that we usually see happen during the season. They could say Kirk is going to play when he's 100%, and he just won't be 100% until they feel like they need to get Penix out of the fray. But the owner, I believe, in Atlanta is very instrumental in this quiet push to put the guy on the field. I mean, you made him the 8th overall pick in the draft. So I just think it's very odd that you're not going to give Michael Penix Jr. 2 games to get reps when presumably he's going to be put on the bench when week one rolls around. It just doesn't make sense. Just like making him the 8th overall pick didn't make sense. So maybe the final decision they make won't make sense either.
I present 2 things, Mike. Number one, I think they're afraid of injuries and that's why they don't want to play him. I know we just talked about it earlier in the segment, but I feel like that's the case. And number two, if there was ever a sign that I knew Ryan Pace had more power in that front office than we all thought he may have initially, it was that move, because we've seen echoes of it here before. And lo and behold, what happens? He gets a promotion. I can't wait until I find out he's the shadow GM, because that's the only way any of this makes any sense.
Well, I mean, one of the criticisms of the Falcons based upon the various decisions they made this year, where is the strategic thinking? Where does this all tie together into a common thread that actually makes sense? Giving Kirk Cousins $100 million fully guaranteed as a practical matter and then drafting Penix doesn't make sense. Not letting Penix play in these games where he would be getting reps and on the shelf until next year in theory doesn't make sense. People think it's going to be 2 or 3 years for Cousins. I think it could be as short as 1. And who knows what's going to happen by the time week one rolls around. It's hard for the rational mind, and most of the time I'd like to think I have one, to predict the actions of the irrational. And the Falcons have been irrational as it comes to their quarterback throughout this offseason.
It's a with Ryan Pace special. Sorry, Lawrence, I'm still annoyed.
With some of the injuries that the Steelers have up front, who makes the most sense to start at quarterback?
Oh, without question, it's Justin Fields. Look, I watched all of the preseason game on Saturday night, and Russell Wilson deserves credit for putting himself out there after he'd missed a lot of time with the calf injury. But when I see Russell Wilson, I want to see whether he's Seahawks or Broncos Russell Wilson. And he looked like Broncos Russell Wilson on Saturday night. Justin Fields brings a level of anticipation and excitement to the Steelers offense that they haven't had since Ben Roethlisberger had his mobility to extend plays, which has been a pretty long time when you consider how every year is a different reality for NFL teams. So it feels like forever since the Steelers have had an exciting offense. Fields gives them more excitement. And if you're going to have an offensive line that isn't as good as it needs to be, and if you're going to be missing Jalen Warren, who I think is their best running back, who has burst acceleration and explosion, if he's going to be out and he's got a hamstring injury from Saturday night, Fields is the guy in your backfield that gives you that element that Jalen Warren otherwise would. And I thought Fields looked great. I mean, he had a wide open touchdown and the guy looked like he was shot out of a cannon to jump up and get it. And he still overthrew him. But then two plays later, he makes a great rollout and threads a needle on the sideline. So there's a little bit of an erratic quality to the Fields passing game, which you guys know well, but the legs, the mobility, if Russell Wilson can't bring that to the table behind an offensive line that isn't getting it done, you got to go with Justin Fields.
Mike Florio, thanks as always. We'll talk next week.
All right, see you.
That is Mike Florio. Next up, we discussed the fact that the recent episode of Hard Knocks gave us some insight into the Bears' ultimately unsuccessful pursuit of Matthew Judon. And he talked about guardrails and protecting the organization and understanding what. But let's just talk about it purely from a football perspective of what the effort itself says. What does it mean about what they think of this defensive line right damn now? That will be the subject of our next segment on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. In Odyssey Station.
Yeah, I'm just going to play with reckless abandonment. Like, the mission is go and destroy everything out there. I think as a good pass rusher, you make other players better around you. You know, it's kind of like that LeBron effect.
All right, that's a big name to invoke there from Matthew Judon arriving at Falcons camp. And the Bears did try. We saw it. We saw them try, and we saw them have discussions about what was a reasonable amount of risk and what would have been an unreasonable amount of risk. And it was interesting to see them come to those conclusions.
Yeah, seeing that what we're learning about Ryan Poles is he does like wrap himself in knots when it comes to some of these decisions, whether it's the Matthew Judon one or him talking about trading with Atlanta so he could make sure that he could get Roma Dunze. And in some cases, having Ian have to talk him out of it. And in other cases, like talking about putting in guardrails because of the emotional draw of bringing something good to a team that clearly needs it. And this is why I've been saying that they're going to have another defensive end, whether it's someone who's on another team right now or they're developing Booker to be that guy, because they're not quite sold on what they have with Walker. Like, if they like him as a rotational guy, I don't know if they like him as the guy opposite Montez.
Well, and I think that there's a couple of factors in play here, Lawrence and Dan. For one of them, for me, is you're seeing consistency in policy. When he says we have guardrails in place, we're willing to go up against them, but we didn't want to go over what we do. That to me is different from how they evaluate how prepared they are for a game. To me, this is similar to what we saw with Montez Sweat. they wanted to make sure that there was some sort of extension in place if they were going to do anything. I also found it really curious when he was talking about what the injuries were that would have bothered him more. I thought that that was really good insight.
Lower body, because he said having the biceps means he's going to be explosive.
Yeah, I was going to say, he said that at 32 years old, you know, the bicep doesn't concern him as much as if it were something more concerning, like a lower body injury, because of that, what you're getting from him off of the line at the beginning of the play. So that to me was really compelling to hear him talk about those aspects of it in a way that made sense for this team. It also speaks to what we saw out of Montez Sweat. And frankly, staying with Sweat, you better up your game across the line. Like that should make you want to level up even more knowing that. And I think we all thought as a show, there was no way they were done when it came to the defensive line.
And it's interesting, too, that for all of the talk leading into the preseason games about Jervon Dexter, you haven't noticed him. And that doesn't mean he's playing poorly. And clearly our priorities are kind of focused on what goes on with Caleb in the offense. But he has to, even if they go and find someone that they feel like is, or bringing back Yannick Ngakoue, they find someone that they think is serviceable at that spot. Where they're hoping that the step comes from is the middle of the line.
Aha, and Brad Biggs brought that up in his mailbag that dropped today, because he said right now he said they don't have a lot of options, at least experienced ones, in his insight. He says, keep a close eye on defensive tackles hitting the waiver wire or veterans who are cut and immediately become free agents. He said, everyone's focused on the idea of a Bears adding an edge rusher. He said, I imagine, and when he says, I imagine, it means he knows. He says, I imagine they're doing work looking at potential castoffs at tackle who could help them. So Justin Jones left via free agency, and he had more playing time than any other player last season. And they like to slide Walker inside in sub packages. So they could be looking for a little experience to be in a reserve role, unless they want to consider Brian, is it Cowart or Coart or the undrafted rookie free agents. Just seems like a spot where they add a player, possibly one with experience.
I kind of wish that they would just kind of flip those two guys
and move Walker in permanently
and move Dexter out permanently.
Body type to me has a lot to do with it. The taller you are and the closer you are to the ball, is that going to cost you speed? Is that going to cost you reaction time?
Well, let's talk through this. Would you rather have a guaranteed replacement level three technique? And if you think that's Walker, that he could do essentially what Justin Jones did, and then have, or take out the possibility that Dexter could make this his big step year, his splash year at the position. I don't know how they've scouted him internally, but now he's learning a new set of moves on the outside. If you were going to do that, isn't it probably too late?
Yes. But, I mean, you know, they've done some stunting with him, too, that at least gives him an opportunity to go against some of the tackles. Look, it could work. It could very much work with him on the inside. And if he can't get to the quarterback, he's 6'6". You put those long arms up and try to knock passes down. Like that then becomes the goal. But that part of it, as much as we talk about the back five of the Bears defense, which I think is one of the top groups in the NFL, they still need help. They're going to need help from a pass rush. And if the only sure thing you have rushing the passer is Montez Sweat, that's a great place to start. We saw some of his impact last year. You'd love to see him get just a nudge of help. And I'd prefer that help came from the inside. Like, I'd prefer it be Dexter and him making things difficult for the quarterback to step up in the pocket, and then them having to make a choice on deployment, on where do the assets go? If he's good enough to warrant a double team, then that means great things for Montez Sweat.
How about this, though? To me, let's look at what Kyler Gordon has done a year ahead of Dexter, right? Let's just look at the last game, for example. We knew there was a huge learning curve there in his rookie season. We saw that happen real time. Then we saw the growth that happened last season. Even the last game is so encouraging for me because that position is so crucial in this defense, right? We know that. Nickel corner, three tech, those are the ones that really make this thing sing. So are you willing to give Dexter that kind of runway to figure that out and find the right spot for him, knowing that that, for example, is what happens when it's done right?
Yes, but the only thing is that I think that it's such... It's weird because, like, what they're asking him to do to me is a similar departure. Like, it's a similar departure from what he did in college versus me asking him to go play end in the NFL, mm-hmm. where they took a guy who fit another system really well and you're trying to make it work. With Gordon, I do think that while he played, you know, primarily outside at Washington, you already knew that if he had to chase the best receiver when he was at Washington, that he could find himself being in the slot and it being totally fine. I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong on this. I just think that it was an easier transition for Gordon to do what he's doing than what the Bears are asking Dexter to do.
I don't think anything is off the table, especially with as flexible as they've been and with their commitment to multiple bodies. And that's where I think we talk about starters and just the way, you know, those paragraphs from Biggs were talking about depth. Depth on the defensive line, more than other positions, depth is every game. Depth is not this guy's hurt, so this guy plays. Defensive line depth is not next man up. It's you've got six active? Like, those guys play, especially in the warmer times here, they're going to play a lot because he likes to keep them fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you may have an opportunity, like you say, Lawrence, whether it's just twists and games and stunts, or say, hey, take a rep here. I like this matchup. Maybe going into a game, you say, all right, yeah, line up outside here. We got a third down package here. You know, we'll get our turbo group where everybody's a defensive end. We'll figure out where to do it. It doesn't have to be static.
I have an idea that I would love for the Bears to run with at some point this season. Just as an aside to all this, since we're talking about the defensive line, at some point on a third down pass situation, you have Jervon Dexter as your three technique on one side and Montez Sweat as the three tech on the other side. And then whoever else at the defensive ends, whether it's Walker or no, just at some point. On a pass rush situation, they were
on the outside.
Wait, yes, because they did that a few times last year. They ran with 2-3 techniques. They would have Jervon Dexter and Zach Pickens both at three tech. And then, you know, that's why I said like an obvious passing situation. You're not doing that on a second and five because they'll just draw right up the middle and you'll be screwed. Like an obvious passing situation, you run 2-3 techniques. It doesn't have to be 2-3 techniques. It's just the idea that came to my head. But the idea being that
it technically can't be because there's only one weak side guard.
Okay, yeah, fine. Sorry.
Nah, I feel what you're saying.
Two guys on the outside shade of the guard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want the personnel package and in the spot of the
I want the other guy opposite of Jervon Dexter to be Montez Sweat.
Okay.
There's something we're not factoring in, guys, that you mentioned that jogged my memory. It's probably another question for Matt Eberflus in our 95-minute segment we're going to attempt to have with him. They did a lot to try to figure out how to keep Montez Sweat fresh last year. And remember, there were some very crucial downs.
We said, where is he?
Where he should have been on the field, like third and goal situations where it resulted in a scoring play for the other team. So I wonder how that gets brought into all of this as well, because if he's still going to be a person who needs those snaps balanced or managed, then that's a big concern as to what we're discussing.
Mm-hmm. I say we ask him about it on Friday.
Guys, I think our segment's going to get like to 125 minutes of all our questions. We got to whittle it down.
Or he can just
I'm really excited to talk with him, honestly. Like I'm looking forward to this. And I hope it goes as well as his other interviews have gone. And I hope he takes what I think are going to be insightful questions and gives us insightful answers. I don't want him to rush us off the phone. Like he's allowed, like, get in the weeds, man. We're good with it.
We just probably have to tell him that in the beginning. We'll just be like, hey, we're dorks. We like it when you teach stuff. So let's
get
weird.
Yeah, I'd be good with that. I would cop to that.
Yay.
We have High Noon coming up next. Are you guys roller coaster fans?
Yeah.
No. You are?
Okay. I haven't been on one in a minute, but yes.
See, I'm not. My wife loves roller coasters. I have probably the roller coaster to end all roller coasters that has now been modeled.
Ray, I'm changing mine. I want to talk about a week zero game, because if you didn't know, week zero is this weekend. There's going to be four college games this weekend. And one of them has a really interesting problem that they're trying to work through.
I have two stories. One I think I'm going to save for tomorrow because it's really interesting, involving a former Bear. Apparently the most obvious promotion has just been created. The partnership that makes the most sense.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Ah, starting trouble. No one likes that. We can get you set up for some stronger starts. You might just need a fresh charge, and we can take care of that free of charge. But if it is time for a new battery, we've got replacement batteries that'll fit your needs, starting at just $79.99. That's what makes us America's number one battery destination.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
At Skechers, we put the S in comfort.
Wait. Skechers put the S in comfort?
Yes, comfort you have to feel to believe. Skechers, we put the S in comfort.
Let me try. Okay, I'm just stepping in and... Oh, wow. Skechers put the S in comfort.
Duh, we told you.
Find Skechers slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Golf Mill Ford just announced 0% for 72 months on new F-150s. Or get 0.9 for 66 months, plus $2,000 bonus cash on new Escapes and no payments for 3 months at Illinois' largest Ford dealer, Golf Mill Ford in Niles.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. An Odyssey station.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street. In front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High Noon?
Wednesday, High Noon. This marks the middle of your work week. It's the hump part of the show on hump day. So there you go. Take that for whatever you want it to mean. And what did we talk about? Well, some Hard Knocks reaction. My radio partners liked it more than I did. I thought it was all right. I just not football-y enough.
Last week's was real bad.
Mark Grody gave us the latest on all that's going on. We heard Matt Eberflus describe why the starters are not going to play, at least most of them. Talked to Mike Florio, and we discussed what it meant that the Bears worked that hard, ultimately in vain, to land Matthew Judah.
It is week zero of college football. You're like, wait, what? Yeah, there's going to be college football this weekend, kicking off with Florida State and Georgia Tech, who are playing their game in Ireland. So that's pretty cool. There's also what I think is an interesting game, SMU in Nevada, which will be Saturday night, and then late Saturday night for all you degenerates out there. Delaware State is playing Hawaii. Usually Hawaii is a week zero candidate because teams need a week to recover from the travel. There's a problem with the travel. Delaware State was supposed to have left yesterday because their theory was they were going to fly there. They were going to practice because it's a 12-hour flight from where they, from JFK. The bus was late, was 3 hours late. They missed their flight to Hawaii.
Oh, no.
So now the players are in New York. And they're trying to figure out how they're going to get the team there. Delaware State, an HBCU. And this is like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for these young men. And scheduling seemingly has screwed things up. My hope is that they're going to be able to get on the flight. But Last I checked, right now, Hawaii's a 39.5-point favorite. I might say that's a good number, considering that they're going to get there and they're going to be hella tired.
Yeah, that's miserable. That the flight from L.A. is long to Hawaii.
Yep.
That's another 6 hours? No more than that, because you're against the jet stream just to L.A.?
It can't be a charter, otherwise they wouldn't have missed it.
Yep.
So it's their own flying coach.
They have to figure out how to get the whole team there commercially.
Most of us fly coach to Furnace Dan.
Yeah, but not a college football team shouldn't have to. Those guys are too big. Ugh. Yikes.
That sounds awful. You know what's not awful? Peanut butter and chocolate together. You know what the name for it is a lot of times? Reese's. You know who else has the last name that's similar? Angel Reese. A match made in heaven, and it happened today.
How about that?
That makes all of the sense now, doesn't it? And Angel Reese says the fans made this happen. It's called the Angel X Reese's Collection. You know, like Angel featuring Reese. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
And it drops today on theangelreese.com, featuring 8 pieces. You get it? So it's apparel. Tees, hoodies, and hats. Although I am also pro Reese's Pieces candy, man. There's something very like perfect.
Satisfying.
Yes, it is satisfying.
Yeah, but
yes.
You know that I think Lawrence, one of his best confectionery observations.
Yes.
Is that the specialized Reese's cups, whether it is the Christmas tree or
the pumpkin,
Easter rabbit, or the pumpkin, whatever it may be, has a more idealized chocolate to peanut butter ratio than their classic peanut butter cup.
Yes, I agree.
But Layla's talking about Reese's Pieces, which are outstanding. And here's another question. Does Angel Reese now, is she at the Senior Bowl next year? Because aren't they sponsored by Reese's?
I think she should be. I would love to get Angel Reese's sports thoughts. She even has a Angel Reese, like, I don't know if you've seen them, the custom shoes she has. And they say Reese on it. And then on the bottom, they say Angel and little Reese's Pieces. It's really cute. I love them. But this makes a lot of sense. The hoodie's cool. It's got an A on it, which kind of reminds me of Alvin and the Chipmunks. But they did Angel Reese's name in the Reese's font. And it's a fun collaboration. It makes a lot of sense. Who doesn't love Reese's? So I love this. Yeah, Angel nailed it on this one. And she said in the press release, this is on the boardroom, at LSU, the NIL deals opened the door for me to start building my brand. And now in my professional career, I'm able to take that to the next level. Get your money, Angel Reese. This makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you got to do this in college, too. So if you need some new apparel, that might be a thing.
All right, roller coaster fans, you are being challenged here. Now, this is a coaster. It was originally designed by a Lithuanian concept artist named Julionis Urbonas.
Urbonas.
And that was back in 2010. And this model was exhibited at the Dublin Science Gallery in 2011, hailed as the flagship exhibition by the gallery itself. And this is the design of the roller coaster that is, I don't know if it's ever going to actually get built.
But dear God.
This is challenging. It's this terrifying ride. It was conceived in 2010. It starts with a steep angled lift that takes riders 1,600 feet before giving guests just seconds to reflect on their lives. From there, passengers are given the option to leave.
So I think that's a good idea.
Given the option to leave, but those who wish to continue must press a button to proceed. Now, you can only ride this roller coaster one time. It's capable of holding 24 passengers. Once you're on board, it starts slowly ascending a massive hill. As the roller coaster reaches the peak, people can press a button to turn back. Otherwise, they're hurtling down the hill at speeds that reach 300 miles an hour.
Oh, my word.
Wait. Before going through 7 different loops. Each loop gets smaller and smaller. It's designed so riders maintain 10 G's of force for 60 seconds. Everyone's blood rushes to their feet, which leaves no more blood in their brain that causes them to first lose their vision, then black out, and then die. It lasts 3 minutes and 20 seconds. It concludes with a straight track that leads back to the station where the deceased are unloaded and 24 more are brought on board.
That got really dark really quickly.
Someone called Marcus LeShock.
You said you like roller coasters. I'm just telling
you.
Yeah,
I also like roller coaster guy. Usually roller coasters and living are not mutually exclusive.
It says this has been designed with the sole intention of killing its passengers.
This sounds like one of those stupid movies that's made overseas and like you hear about it later and it gets recapped on one of those AI channels on YouTube and you're not going to watch the movie, but you might watch the recap. You guys know what I'm talking about?
This literally doesn't sound like it's real.
Are we sure that
this is a real story?
Yes.
They're not actually making this, are they?
No, I said it's modeled and it's finally been put into a concept model. It reminds me, do you remember the Monty Python sketch? It's an old, like, deep cut Monty Python sketch.
Didn't know.
About they're presenting, it's an architectural firm that's presenting what they believe is supposed to be an office building, but they hired an architectural firm that only makes slaughterhouses. And they didn't know that, so they talk about people entering the building, and then they go into the whirring fan of blades before
Joe Budden retired.
I would like to actually see the model work and then see how quickly those little.
You want to ride it, Dan?
Nah, not right now.
Maybe. Roller coaster, baby.
Give me a couple days in Vegas.
Lawrence,
and we'll
talk. Our little song got a little bad there, didn't it? We were having some fun, and then it just went to a horrible.
I think that we were in the right place talking about roller coaster.
Yeah, you can change it to roller coaster of death from roller coaster of love.
Have you guys seen? Speaking of YouTube, have you guys seen the Vox documentary on Verrückt, that Schlitterbahn in Kansas City roller coaster that they had to shut down? Oh my God! It'll make you rethink what you just read. A poor child died because of what happened.
Sorry, I wasn't laughing at that. It was the 773 says this roller coaster sounds like the Hector Neris experience.
Dear God.
The heart attack, Hector.
Shout out to the Ohio players.
That's High Noon.
I just want peanut butter and chocolate together. Is that so much?
We can get you some. Sure.
No, I already.
They're great
together. I've got a litany of snacks here for the plane. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Luckily there's a store like right across the street, and I'm gonna get some snacks after the show.
Just don't be that person that brings on the smelly bag of fast food, sits right next to you, and just sort of.
Usually that's not how snacks work.
Undoes all the
that's
wax
a meal.
Paper.
I don't know. What about Rex Ryan on Hard Knocks, where he's like, "Let's get a GD snack."
That's
he
the
meant
kind
like
of
an ice cream sandwich.
Yeah, that's a Hard Knocks I like right there.
Huh? Ice cream on a plane is problematic. Like, you only have a certain amount of time, man. That boarding line is going to move at its own pace. That's just bold.
It's very bold.
Next up, Matt Eberflus talks to and about Caleb Williams.
Roller coaster.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Ah, starting trouble. No one likes that. We can get you set up for some stronger starts. You might just need a fresh charge, and we can take care of that free of charge. But if it is time for a new battery, we've got replacement batteries that'll fit your needs, starting at just $79.99. That's what makes us America's number one battery destination.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
At Skechers, we put the S in comfort.
Wait. Skechers put the S in comfort?
Yes. Comfort you have to feel to believe. Skechers, we put the S in comfort.
Let me try. Okay, I'm just stepping in and... Oh, wow. Skechers put the S in comfort.
Duh. We told you.
Find Skechers slip-ins at a Skechers store, Skechers.com, or wherever stylish footwear is sold.
Golf Mill Ford just announced 0% for 72 months on new F-150s. Or get 0.9 for 66 months plus $2,000 bonus cash on new Escapes and no payments for 3 months at Illinois' largest Ford dealer, Golf Mill Ford in Niles.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. An Odyssey station.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
Wednesday, high noon. This marks the middle of your work week. It's the hump part of the show on hump day. So there you go. Take that for whatever you want it to mean. And what did we talk about? Well, some Hard Knocks reaction. My radio partners liked it more than I did. I thought it was all right. I just not football-y enough.
Last week's was real bad.
Mark Grody gave us the latest on all that's going on. We heard Matt Eberflus describe why the starters are not going to play, at least most of them. Talked to Mike Florio, and we discussed what it meant that the Bears worked that hard, ultimately in vain, to land Matthew Judon.
It is week zero of college football. You're like, wait, what? Yeah, there's going to be college football this weekend, kicking off with Florida State and Georgia Tech, who are playing their game in Ireland. So that's pretty cool. There's also what I think is an interesting game, SMU and Nevada, which will be Saturday night, and then late Saturday night for all you degenerates out there. Delaware State is playing Hawaii. Usually Hawaii is a week zero candidate because teams need a week to recover from the travel. There's a problem with the travel. Delaware State was supposed to have left yesterday because their theory was they were going to fly there. They were going to practice because it's a 12-hour flight from where they, from JFK. The bus was late, was 3 hours late. They missed their flight to Hawaii.
Oh, no.
So now the players are in New York, and they're trying to figure out how they're going to get the team there. Delaware State, an HBCU, and this is like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for these young men, and scheduling seemingly has screwed things up. My hope is that they're going to be able to get on the flight, but last I checked, right now, Hawaii's a 39.5-point favorite. I might say that's a good number, considering that they're going to get there and they're going to be hella tired.
Yeah, that's miserable. That the flight from L.A. is long to Hawaii.
Yep.
That's another 6 hours? No more than that, because you're against the jet stream just to L.A.?
It can't be a charter, otherwise they wouldn't have missed it.
Yep.
So it's
their own
flying coach.
They have to figure out how to get the whole team there commercially.
Most of us fly coach to Furnace Dan.
Yeah, but not a college football team shouldn't have to. Those guys are too big. Ugh. Yikes.
That sounds awful. You know what's not awful? Peanut butter and chocolate together. You know what the name for it is a lot of times? Reese's. You know who else has the last name that's similar? Angel Reese. A match made in heaven, and it happened today. How
I love
about
it.
That? That makes all of the sense now, doesn't it? And Angel Reese says the fans made this happen. It's called the Angel X Reese's Collection. You know, like Angel featuring Reese. Get it?
Mm-hmm.
And it drops today on theangelreese.com featuring 8 pieces. You get it? So it's apparel.
Reese's pieces.
Yeah, tees, hoodies, and hats. Although I am also pro Reese's pieces candy, man. There's something very, like, perfect.
Satisfying.
Yes, it is satisfying.
Yeah, but
yes.
You know that I think Lawrence, one of his best confectionery observations.
Yes.
Is that the specialized Reese's cups, whether it is the Christmas tree or
the pumpkin,
Easter rabbit,
the egg,
or the pumpkin, whatever it may be, has a more idealized chocolate to peanut butter ratio than their classic peanut butter cup.
But
Layla's talking about Reese's Pieces, which are outstanding. And here's another question. Does Angel Reese now, is she at the Senior Bowl next year? Because aren't they sponsored by Reese's?
I think she should be. I would love to get Angel Reese's sports thoughts. She even has a Angel Reese, like, I don't know if you've seen them, the custom shoes she has. And they say Reese on it, and then on the bottom they say Angel and little Reese's pieces. It's really cute. I love them. But this makes a lot of sense. The hoodie's cool. It's got an A on it, which kind of reminds me of Alvin and the Chipmunks. But they did Angel Reese's name in the Reese's font. And it's a fun collaboration. It makes a lot of sense. Who doesn't love Reese's? So I
love
like,
this.
Yeah, Angel nailed it on this one. And she said in the press release. This is on the boardroom. At LSU, the NIL deals opened the door for me to start building my brand, and now in my professional career, I'm able to take that to the next level. Get your money, Angel Reese. This makes a lot of sense. I'm glad you got to do this in college, too. So if you need some new apparel, that might be a thing.
All right, roller coaster fans, you are being challenged here. Now, this is a coaster. It was originally designed by a Lithuanian concept artist named Julijonas Urbonas. And that was back in 2010. And there's this model was exhibited at the Dublin Science Gallery in 2011, hailed as the flagship exhibition by the gallery itself. And this is the design of the roller coaster that is, I don't know if it's ever going to actually get built.
But dear God.
This is challenging. It's this terrifying ride. It was conceived in 2010. It starts with a steep angled lift that takes riders 1,600 feet before giving guests just seconds to reflect on their lives. From there, passengers are given the option to leave.
So I think that's a good idea.
Given the option to leave, but those who wish to continue must press a button to proceed. Now, you can only ride this roller coaster one time. It's capable of holding 24 passengers. Once you're on board, it starts slowly ascending a massive hill. As the roller coaster reaches the peak, people can press a button to turn back. Otherwise, they're hurtling down the hill at speeds that reach 300 miles an hour.
Oh, my word.
Wait, before going through seven different loops. Each loop gets smaller and smaller. It's designed so riders maintain 10 G's of force for 60 seconds. Everyone's blood rushes to their feet, which leaves no more blood in their brain that causes them to first lose their vision, then black out, and then die. It lasts 3 minutes and 20 seconds. It concludes with a straight track that leads back to the station where the deceased are unloaded and 24 more are brought on board.
That got really dark really quickly.
Someone call Marcus LeShock.
You said you like roller coasters. I'm just telling
you.
Yeah,
I also like roller coaster living guy. Usually roller coasters and living are not mutually exclusive.
It says this has been designed with the sole intention of killing its passengers.
This sounds like one of those stupid movies that's made overseas and like you hear about it later and it gets recapped on one of those AI channels on YouTube and you're not going to watch the movie, but you might watch the recap. You guys know what I'm talking about?
This literally doesn't sound like it's real. Are we sure that this is a real story?
Yes.
They're not actually making this, are they?
No, I said it's modeled and it's finally been put into a concept model. It reminds me, do you remember the Monty Python sketch? It's an old, like, deep cut Monty Python sketch.
Didn't know.
About they're presenting, it's an architectural firm that's presenting what they believe is supposed to be an office building, but they hired an architectural firm that only makes slaughterhouses. And they didn't know that, so they talk about people entering the building, and then they go into the whirring fan of blades before
I thought that Joe Budden retired.
I would like to actually see the model work and then see how quickly those little.
You want to ride it, Dan?
Nah, not right now.
Maybe. A roller coaster, baby.
Give me a couple days in Vegas.
Lawrence,
and we'll
our little song got a little bad there, didn't it? We were having some fun, and then it just went to a horrible.
I think that we were in the right place talking about roller coasters.
Yeah, you can change it to roller coaster of death from roller coaster of love.
Have you guys seen? Speaking of YouTube, have you guys seen the Vox documentary on Verrückt, that Schlitterbahn in Kansas City roller coaster that they had to shut down? Oh my God! It'll make you rethink what you just read. Like it. A poor child died because of what happened.
Sorry, I wasn't laughing at that. It was the 773 says this roller coaster sounds like the Hector Neris experience.
Dear God.
The heart attack, Hector.
Shout out to the Ohio players.
That's High Noon.
I don't just want peanut butter and chocolate together. Is that so much?
We can get you some. Sure.
No, I already.
They're great
together. I've got a litany of snacks here for the plane. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm gonna. There's a store like right across the street, and I'm gonna get some snacks after the show.
Just don't be that person that brings on the smelly bag of fast food, sits right next to you, and just sort of.
Usually, that's not how snacks work.
Undoes all the
that's
wax
a meal.
Paper.
I don't know. What about Rex Ryan on Hard Knocks, where he's like, "Let's get a GD snack."
That's the kind
like an ice cream sandwich.
Yeah, that's a Hard Knocks I like right there.
Huh? Ice cream on a plane is problematic. Like, you only have a certain amount of time, man. That boarding line is going to move at its own pace. That's just bold.
It's very bold.
Next up, Matt Eberflus talks to and about Caleb Williams.
Roller coaster.